Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com. Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
This is continuing coverage in the trial of Alex Murdaugh from True Crime Today.
Welcome to day 19 of continuing coverage in the trial of Alex Murdaugh. My name is Tony Bruschi. It has been a very interesting day with Buster Murdaugh taking the stand and the defense bringing up expert witnesses. Lots to come in our coverage. Let's head to the courtroom for our first segment.
Good morning. I have two issues. I don't know if you all have something. First, we have a juror who is not feeling well and who is at a doctor's appointment. Juror number 441. That juror is not here. We will need to replace that juror with an alternate. As I understand it, this is a juror who took the place of another juror. Took place of 220. Any comment, state or the defense?
Court, indulge one moment. Remember, I apologize, you're on 441.
Maybe someone heard it from your side.
The question would be, has she indicated she's too ill to be here, or she's just gone to a doctor's appointment and could be here by?
Not feeling well. They have doctor's appointment. I haven't spoken with the juror. This note came from someone. Did it come from the clerk's office? From the jury coordinator.
Documents we hadn't really looked at before.
Can you have the juror coordinator come up?
No objection to replacing her.
Your Honor, that's fine with proceeding if that's the court's desire to proceed on. Certainly, I don't have any objection either.
Proceeding as opposed to what?
I mean, she's at the doctor's appointment. I don't know if that was something that would keep her out for a while. That would be the only thing. But obviously, she's not here and not feeling well. So that's why we have the alternates.
And Your Honor, and I know you're going to tell the jury, day 21, and we'd like to not be doing day 31. And if this delays it, we sit here and wait to find out what her health condition is. It might go on for a while. So we'd rather go ahead and proceed.
All right, Madam Juror, jury coordinator, what?
Your Honor, can I make statement right quick?
Yes, sir.
We think the defense will be rested. We will rest our case by Friday, probably late day Friday. And then I don't know if the state has any reply, but we're looking at finishing early next week. I don't know if it makes sense to notify the jury of this anticipated schedule, and that creates that we know we're going to lose some people if they're aware right now that we may be finishing early next week and we'd be coming up short. I just don't want to come up short. That's
all right.
Of course, that's all predicated on cross-examination and reply.
Sure. Did you receive a call from a juror or some communication from the juror? Tell us about it. Stand and tell us about it.
I received the first down examination. general session, she took the message, and they said they weren't coming with this weekend, and that he has a doctor's appointment.
All right. So it's the same as the other juror who ended up in the emergency room, and we replaced that juror. So we now have, we'll need to select by lot the next juror. Out of the three, we need another juror. Any objection to the clerk randomly pulling out the number out of the box?
None from the state, Your Honor.
Nothing from the defense, Your Honor.
All right. Let's see who we have. Tell us who it is. Juror number.
Juror number 530.
All right, juror number 530 will become part of the regular panel. Secondly, I've been receiving over the past 2 to 3 days emails concerning a social media post by Mr. Griffin, commenting upon witnesses' testimony and quality of the investigation by the state. And it appeared on my Twitter feed this morning. Mr. Griffin, is this part of your defense strategy or...
Your Honor, all I did was retweet an article that was published in the Washington Post. I didn't put any comment. I didn't make any statement. I just retweeted the article that's in the newspaper. That's all I did.
We had an NBA player who retweeted an article, a professional basketball player who retweeted an article that resulted in him being suspended from the NBA for about 10 days and cost him about $10 million in salary. So retweeting is the same as, for to some, as if you, your tweet. It appeared, I didn't know that, well, I mean, I'm not a Twitter friend of yours, but it just appeared on my, under Twitter. First thing up this morning was you. You know, we had the lawyer who had a similar name to, a person with a similar name to our lawyer witness, and it was someone else by the same name. In your interest, in the, your instance, it's your name and your picture, so...
Retweet the article. No question about it.
Yeah, well, I've been reviewing Rule 3.6 regarding that. Whereas the rule does not specifically state that that lawyers are prohibited from criticizing witnesses during the course of the trial or commenting on a case that they're actively participating in, I think it goes against the spirit of the law, of the rule, and it doesn't pass the field test. So that's, to quote Judge Kinard, it doesn't pass the field test, so you should not post or repost anything that would give me or the general public or hopefully never land in the hand of a juror who, you know, the jurors were instructed not to discuss the case, and obviously that did not extend to the lawyers, but it's not a good practice, and it could easily lead to modification of our rules that might specifically address something like that. So I'll leave it at that.
And, Your Honor, I will not retweet anything or tweet anything until this trial is over.
Yes, sir. Anything else before the jury comes?
Nothing from the state, Your Honor. Nothing for the defense, Your Honor.
Okay. You will bring the jury. Good morning. Day number 21. Now the defense's case. As you all might know, one juror is missing, absent, and that juror has to be replaced, and that juror is being replaced by juror number 530. Juror number 530, not 530. All right, juror number 530, you're one of the first 12 now, participating member of the regular jury panel. And we'll press on with our case, and hopefully we'll not have much more attrition, but it's understandable the longer this case goes. We'll proceed now with the defense's case.
Thank you, Your Honor. Defense will call Richard Alexander Murdoch, Jr., also known as Buster Murdoch.
Do you swear or affirm the testimony you give today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? So help you God. Thank you. You'll have a seat up on the witness stand. Adjust your chair and your microphone. And if you'll state your full name and spell your last name.
Richard Alexander Murdoch, Jr., Murdaugh. I go by Buster.
Mr. Murdoch, is your father sitting over here at defense table?
Yes, sir.
Tell the jury a little bit about yourself. Where you born? Where you raised? Where'd you go to school?
Right. So my name is Buster, 26 years old. I live in Hilton Head Island, South Carolina. I was born in Savannah and lived in Beaufort for about 2 years when I was a little child. We moved to Hampton in about 2000, and I grew up in Hampton, went to Wade Hampton High School. And after high school, I went to a small college in Spartanburg called Wofford.
Did your mother, Maggie?
Yes, sir.
And your brother, Paul?
Yes, sir.
The when you moved to Hampton, do you remember how old you were when you first moved to Hampton?
Three or four.
Okay. And did you live in Hampton in a house in the city limits?
Yes, sir.
The town limits?
Yes, sir.
And you did that with your mom and dad and brother for how long?
Around 20 years.
Right. What schools did you go to coming up through in Hampton County? Would you go to grade school?
Went to Ben Hazel Primary School, Hampton Elementary School, North District Middle School, Wade Hampton High School.
Okay. And as you were growing up, what were your interests, Buster?
Sports, playing sports, doing things outdoors, hunting, fishing.
And was your father involved in those interests with you?
Yes, sir.
And was your mother also?
Yes, sir.
And in what way?
Well, my father coached every little league team I played on up until I started playing for the schools in which had a coach.
And what about Paul? What were his interests growing up?
Paul's interests were outdoors, mostly hunting, fishing, playing around in the woods.
Right. Did he also play sports at times?
He did. Yeah, he played basketball and baseball.
Did your dad coach him as well?
He did.
And would your parents attend all of your and Paul's sporting events as you're growing?
Every game. And it was a rarity for them to miss one. And then if they had to, they would call and explain. And
right. And at some point in time, did your parents buy this property off Moselle Road?
Yes, sir.
Do you remember roughly when that was?
Right around 2012, I think. I would have been a sophomore in high school.
And when that property was first purchased, did you move out to Moselle or are you still living in Hampton?
So we had a house in Hampton and also purchased the property at Moselle, which had a house. And for the beginning stages of owning Moselle, Hampton was still working as our primary residence. But I believe it was Hurricane Matthew, or one of the hurricanes came through and blew a bunch of pine trees over on the house. So it had to get work done to it. And from that point, we moved out from Hampton to Moselle while the house was getting fixed. And more or less, it never transitioned back to Hampton. It just almost like Moselle became the primary residence.
And during this time, did your family also have a house at Edenstone?
Yes, sir.
How frequently would you stay at the house at Edenstone?
Very frequently during the summertime. Almost every weekend.
And when your family essentially relocated to the Moselle property, making it primary residence, were you still living at home in high school, or remember how old you were at that point in time?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Jim. What did you say that again?
Were you living at home at that point in time? Is that while you were still in high school? Or
yes.
School? Do you remember when you transitioned to Moselle and started staying there basically full-time during the school year?
So when I was still in high school, we were living in the Hampton house, and then I'd gone off to college,
okay,
which is when the stuff happened, and they moved out to Moselle. So I was living in college.
And when did you go off to college?
2014.
Okay. So sometime after around 2014, family relocated to Moselle for the most part because of the hurricane damage.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Tell the jury a little bit about the Moselle property. I know they've heard a fair amount, but I think you probably know it better than anybody.
Yeah, so the Moselle property is roughly 1,700 acres. And a lot of that is really not even accessible. It's a lot of swamp lands, a lot of stuff that you just, you know, no road systems or anything like that. But a big portion of it is you know, has road systems and everything, and it's a big property. It's broken up into several different parcels that border each other, and, you know, we have 20 some odd deer stands, dove fields, duck ponds, just all over the property. So
what type of hunting did you and your brother and your father do at Moselle?
Everything. Deer, duck, quail, dove. Hogs.
You have a duck pond?
I have a duck pond.
Okay. And the hunting was, did you have a lot of friends come out and hunt as well?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now the jury has seen an aerial view of the property, and there's a main house, there's shed, kennels, and then there's a house sort of right on Moselle Road. What do you call that house?
That's the cabin.
The cabin. And did you live in the cabin with friends over summers at some point in time?
I did. The summer of my sophomore year, after my sophomore year, me and two of my buddies lived in the cabin.
Okay. And who are those buddies?
Nolan Tootin and Rogan Gibson.
Okay. And the we can get more of this. We've heard about hogs and pigs on the property. Can you tell the jury a little bit about that?
About the hogs?
Yes, sir.
We had a lot of hogs. And if you don't know, hogs are very destructive to a piece of property. You know, we plant food plots for the deer, plant the fields for the doves and the ducks, and they basically go through and ruin it all. So given the high population of hogs, we, you know, would frequently go out and hunt them, try to cut the numbers down a little bit.
Did what kind of guns did you have there at Moselle?
We had a lot of guns.
You have shotguns?
We did. Shotguns.
You have 12-gauge shotguns?
12-gauge shotguns, 20-gauge shotguns, 16-gauge shotguns, 28-gauge shotguns.
Right. And how many rifles, type rifles, did you have on the property?
A lot.
Can you just name some of them?
Yeah, 270, 270 short mag, 7mm 08, 308, 243, 223, 300 blackout.
And what type of ammo did you keep on the property?
Well, I mean, all ammo is for those calibers.
Sure. And where were the guns kept primarily?
In the gun room at the main house at Moselle.
And was there a pool table in the gun room?
There was.
Okay. Were there times when guns were left elsewhere on the property?
Yes.
Where else on the property would guns be left?
Well, just myself. I mean, I've left them up at the shed before. I've left them on golf cart used that day, left them in a truck. I mean, guns would just not always find their way back to the gun room.
How about Paul? How was he with securing guns?
Not good.
What do you mean by that?
He would... Paul left guns probably more on the property than anybody else. And just, and sometimes if he, like sometimes he would use my gun and then he would leave it and then I'd have to track it down.
Right. Did Paul carry guns in his truck?
He did.
Would he keep his truck locked up?
No, not all the time.
At some point in time, you and Paul received 300 blackouts for Christmas.
Yes, sir.
Do you remember roughly that 2016 or 2017?
Sounds right.
Okay. And what color was your 300 blackout?
It was black.
And have you been sitting in this courtroom during the entire trial?
Yes, sir.
And the jury's seen a black 300 blackout. Is that yours?
It is. That is my 300 blackout.
Was that the one you got for Christmas?
Yes, sir.
And what color was Paul's?
Paul's was black and tan.
And when you say black and tan, what part was tan and what part was black?
So the receiver would have been tan, and the, I think, and barrel would have been tan.
What part would have been black?
Stock, maybe.
Okay. And so yours was all black, his was black and tan.
That's right.
What happened to his that he got for Christmas in 2016?
His gun was apparently stolen, lost, taken. Yeah.
How do you know that?
That's just what Paul told me.
What happened to your gun after Paul's was stolen?
My gun became, you know, what we would both use.
And would did that create some confrontation between you two at times?
Yes, sir.
And what? Why?
Well, kind of like I just touched on. So he would use it. He's not very good about putting it back where he found it. I leave it somewhere, I go back and, you know, want to get it, and it's not there.
Did you notice, were you aware that Paul got a replacement at some point in time?
No, sir.
Well, you heard about that in the courtroom.
Yes, sir.
Okay. But up to that point, did you ever see Paul use the replacement?
No, sir. I've never seen a replacement.
So every time in your presence, Paul was using a 300 blackout, which one would it be?
Mine.
There's, I'm not going to pull these guns out, Buster, but there's been this discussion and the jury has seen a 12-gauge Benelli with a Mojo sticker on it. Whose gun is that?
That's mine.
And what's Mojo?
Mojo is a brand of decoy. It's... Basically what it is it's, you know, say you buy a wood duck Mojo and it sits on a pole, but the wings are motorized. So it's to replicate, you know, a more alive duck.
And did you, why is your
But now they have a Mojo sticker on it.
Because I bought a Mojo decoy, and in the box it came with a sticker, and I put the sticker on the gun barrel.
And so that way you know that's your gun.
That's right.
I believe the evidence in the case is that that Mojo Benelli, when it was seized, was loaded. Did you frequently put the gun away loaded?
Yes, sir.
Why?
Knowing that I might need it again at any point.
Okay.
Just, you know, put it back on the shelf. I kept the safety on.
Okay. And I think it was loaded with a 3-inch and a 3.5-inch turkey load. Do you remember that you would load that gun with a 3-inch and a 3.5-inch?
Yes, sir.
And why would you do that?
I do that because when I go turkey hunting, the goal is to, you know, get the turkey close to you and shoot it in the first try. But if I were to miss and the turkey goes running away and I try to shoot it again, I put a bigger shell, larger shell, behind the smaller one for that purpose. Okay.
And that's something you commonly did?
Yes, sir.
Did you ever load in a 12-gauge, 20-gauge, 28-gauge, a buckshot followed by a birdshot?
No, sir. I've never done that.
Have you ever known anybody to do that?
No, sir.
Do you know of any reason to do that?
No, I can't think of any reason to do that.
And specifically, have you ever loaded in any gun a buckshot followed by dry lock, steel, waterfowl pellet?
I have not.
You know anybody to do that?
No, sir.
You know any reason to do that?
No, sir.
Okay. Have you ever seen any guns on your property loaded in that fashion?
No, sir.
Buckshot with some sort of birdshot right behind it?
No, sir.
The jury's heard testimony about goings and comings, which way you go in and go out at Moselle. How many entrances were there at Moselle?
Two entrances.
And will you describe the two entrances?
So the main entrance is pretty much straight out of the front door of the house. You would go down a dirt road, and then you would come up on big brick columns, and that's what I refer to as the main entrance. But down by the kennels is another entrance, and that one is a little bit different. That one has the mailbox beside it, and those are the two entrances.
Okay. So let's talk about coming onto the property. Which entrance coming onto the property would your mother normally take?
I would say normally everybody took the main entrance, unless that there was a reason that you needed to go down the other one, which for her reasons of going down the other one would be the mailbox. And also when we got packages delivered from Amazon, they actually would go to the shed as opposed to the house.
So your deliveries would go not to the yellow or whatever white house that you lived in, but down at the shed.
That's right.
Okay. Now, leaving Moselle, the property, which way would you, Alex, your mom, Paul normally go leaving Moselle?
Out of the main gate.
Okay. And if you're going to Almeda, which way do you turn coming out of the main gate?
To the right.
In 2020, 2021, during the summer months, where did your mother prefer to stay?
At Edisto.
And where were you staying, say, in the spring, summer of 2021? Where were you living?
Spring, Moselle.
And then summer, where'd you move to?
I was down at Edisto a lot in the summer.
Okay. And then where was Paul living in the, say, spring of 2021?
Spring of 20 or 21?
21. Now, man, did you, maybe I said the wrong thing. In the spring of 2021, where were you living?
Spring of 2021.
Do you have an apartment in Columbia?
Yes, yes, I did have an apartment in Columbia.
Split time between Columbia and Moselle? And,
yes, sir.
And you have a girlfriend?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And then in the summer of 2021, well, in June, where were you living?
Between Columbia and between Rock Hill.
Okay. And who lived in Rock Hill?
My girlfriend's mom.
And then in the spring up through June of 2021, where was Paul living?
In Columbia.
He had an apartment in Columbia?
Yes, sir.
And was he enrolled at University of South Carolina in the spring of 2021?
Yes, sir.
Okay, then once school got out, do you know where Paul relocated to?
Anywhere? No, not exactly. I know that. I mean, I think he went down to live with John Marvin. He was working for him for the summertime.
And who's John Marvin?
My uncle.
And what kind of business does John Marvin have?
He has a rental business, and he sells Kubota tractors.
And where does he have store locations?
One in Okotie, one in Hampton.
And was Paul working at the Okotie location?
Yes.
Just sort of backing up, did you and your dad and mother and brother Paul do a lot of things with your mother's family, the Branstetters?
Yes, sir.
What type of things would y'all do?
Well, we gather every holiday, and you know, other than that, we would do trips together. We would go down to Key West, go over to my Aunt Mary and Uncle Bart's lake house, river house, just
right.
Stuff like that. Take trips, family trips.
And I'm just going to pull up on the screen, Doug, Defendant's Exhibit 122, which is in evidence, Your Honor. And Buster, take a look on the screen, and I believe your Aunt Marion testified about this. Can you tell the jury what this photo is?
This is a photo of me and my brother and my mom and my dad.
And was this taken in, I think, May 21? You were up for a baby shower, is that right?
Yes, sir.
And where was this?
So this is in at Lake Kiwi in a community called the Reserve.
Okay. And y'all are visiting with whom?
With my aunt and uncle, Aunt Marion, Uncle Bart.
And for what purpose?
For my oldest cousin's baby shower.
All right. And was events like this unusual or
no, sir,
frequent?
Or common.
And was your father close with Maggie's dad, your grandfather, Papa T, as it's been heard in this, it's been known in this courtroom?
Yes, sir, he was.
What kind of things would they do together?
They would do a lot together. For a long time, there was my grandfather had a camping trip, and Papa T frequented the camping trip. He liked that. Dad and Papa T would go to Carolina sporting events together, play golf together.
And did you spend a lot of time with your dad and your grandfather, Papa T?
Yes, sir.
You play golf with him?
Yes, sir.
We'll get to that in a little bit. And let's talk about your dad's side of the family. Was it the close-knit family?
Yes, sir.
And your grandfather, your dad's father, his name was what?
Handsome.
Handsome. And that was a nickname, I think?
Yes, sir. It's what grandchildren called him.
Everybody.
Well, it started as grandchildren calling him, and then all of our friends started calling him that.
But that was Randolph Murdoch?
Yes, sir.
And then your grandmother's name, Libby?
Yes, sir.
And they lived close by, is that correct?
That's right.
Where do they live?
Alameda.
And in relation to
I guess Hampton. Where's Alameda?
So straight down 278, like you're going to Yemisee.
Okay. And how far away is it from, say, the law office of PMPED to mm-hmm. your grandparents' house?
Right.
Roughly how far is it?
10 minutes.
And how far of a drive was it? Would it have been from your house in Hampton?
I mean, roughly the same.
Right. And you know roughly how far of a drive would it have been from the house in Moselle?
Probably more like 20.
25, and maybe. And did you and your mom and your dad and your brother Paul spend a lot of time with the Murdoch side of the family?
Yes, sir.
And what would y'all do together?
Similar stuff, obviously, gathering during the holidays, various things like that. We would take trips with that side of the family as well, you know, get out everybody, rent a big house, you know, meet up on the water on the weekends, just a lot of stuff going on with that side of the family as well.
And so I guess let's go back and let's identify on your dad's side of the family. Did your dad have brothers and sisters?
Yes, sir.
Who are they?
John Marvin, Randy, and Lynn. Okay.
And then John Marvin, Randy, and Lynn had children, did they?
Yes, sir.
So you had a lot of cousins?
Yes, sir.
And the families would get together, those cousins and aunts and uncles?
That's right.
Okay. And was there property down on Chichesse that y'all would spend time at?
Yes, sir. That was the family river house, Chichesse.
And where is that located?
So it's located in Okotee, Waters Avenue, off the Chichesse River.
Right.
It's pretty desolate.
The in the spring, in May and June of 2021, what was your grandfather Handsome's health condition as you knew it?
Not good. He wasn't in good health.
What do you understand his health problems to be?
I understand he had cancer, and I understood that, you know, he was having a pretty big battle with it.
And what was your grandmother? What did you call your grandmother?
M. Yes, sir.
What health issues did she have in May and June of 2021?
She has Alzheimer's.
And would your dad frequently check on Handsome and M?
Yes, sir.
Would you go with your dad to check on Handsome and M?
I would occasionally go with them too. Yes, sir.
Okay. And what times of day would you go with your dad to check on your grandparents?
It could have been any time. Went over at lunch a lot of times. Went over in the evenings a lot. Just no real set schedule. Just kind of mosey on over there.
When would your mother go with your dad?
She would. Not regularly, but she went.
Would Paul stop in and check on your grandparents?
Yes, sir.
Was that fairly regularly for something Paul to do?
Yeah, college? Paul would do it regularly as well.
When you would go with your dad in the evenings, and maybe it's not limited to the evenings, where would you park when you go visit your grandparents?
For the most part, just like a ordinary afternoon visit, parking, you know, the garage, the carport. But if we went over a little bit later, then we would pull around to the back side of the house and be able to enter through the back door.
Okay. And what's at the back side of the house?
So when you walk in the back side, it's like we call it a sunroom, but it's, you know, a dining table. It's got a TV in there. And then that is right next to the kitchen. And then if you're in the kitchen and you go to the right, then that's where my grandparents' room is. Okay.
Doug, if you could pull up page 38 from State's Exhibit 524, please. That's in evidence. I believe it is. Page 38. Yes. And that's page 38. So, Buster, this is from State's Exhibit 524, which is in evidence, which is the GPS data off the OnStar provided from General Motors. And can you see that?
Yes, sir.
Can you tell us what's that house?
So that's my grandparents' house at Alameda.
All right. And these dots in the back, and I'm going to point to this line of dots just right next to the circle that Doug drew. Do you see them? They seem to be connected right here on the far right?
Yes, sir.
Where is that on the property?
So that's right off the back corner of the house.
Is that a place where you'd normally park to go in the back of the house?
Yes, sir. That is where.
And have you parked there yourself?
I have.
Have you seen other family members park there?
I have.
Is that a customary place to park when you go in the back door where the kitchen sunroom is?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'm going to show you some photos, which are exhibits. I'll ask you if you can just identify them. Don't show them to the jury, but just tell us what those photographs are of.
So these photos are of the area we're talking about, off the back corner of the house at Alameda.
All right. Your Honor, this time I move defendants' exhibits 130 through 136 in evidence.
Well, Judge.
Thank you. So, Doug, please pull up exhibit 133. And Buster, tell us what 133 is, please.
Yeah, so this is the back door entrance to where I was just talking about, to enter into the sunroom, kitchen, into the kind of back quarters where my grandparents' bedrooms were.
All right, and if you'll pull up 134, Doug, please. And what's 134?
Same thing, same backside of the property, just a little bit of a different angle.
So the part of the house to the right of the photo, what's that? Can you see here?
Yeah, so that right there would be my grandparents' bedroom.
Okay, so that's in the evening, your grandparents would be in that part of the house, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And if you went to the garage entrance, what would happen? What would be required of your grandparents or some sitter to let you in?
Yeah, so you could go and knock, but a lot of times they're in the back part of the house and they don't hear you. So you normally call and say, like, hey, I'm at the front. I need to be, you know, let in. And they'd have to walk from the back to the front, unlock the door, and let you in.
But if you're in the back, how far is the walk?
Quarter of the distance it would be to walk to the – it's very short.
And was it common to go in the back door?
Yes, sir.
And then I'm going to show you exhibit 131. Please pull that up, Doug. So, Your Honor, can he step down off the stand and point to the jury where... So, Buster, step aside so that the jury can, you're not blocking their view. I don't have a pointer, but can you point out in this photo where you would normally park? All right. Yeah, point out to the jury where you normally park to go into the...
So, you would park, you know, right about here, coming right off the, basically, the corner of the house, and this is the same
same stairway to go up to the back door.
So you'd park in the grass?
Yes, sir.
And near that satellite dish? Or not near the satellite dish?
Yeah, objection.
Where would you park in relation to the satellite dish?
Yeah, right there close to it.
All right. And that was... Now, hang on, Buster. I'm sorry. Come back. What's this structure right here?
That's what we call the cook shed.
And maybe there's... And what's in the cook shed?
A couple couches, big TVs. That's mostly where my grandfather used to have a cookout on every third Thursday of a month, and that's where he would have his little gathering. It's just an open concept in there with a kitchen, TV, couple couches.
All right. Hang on, Doug. You pull up 132 while Buster's still standing here. Buster, what's this structure to the right of the, as you're looking at the cookhouse?
That's old shed.
Okay. Now, roughly, what's the distance between the cookhouse and the cook shed to where you'd normally park to go in the back door?
You know, 10, 20 yards, maybe.
Okay. All right. Go ahead and take your seat, please. Buster, how often would you speak with your mom and dad on the telephone on a daily basis?
Pretty much every day.
Right. And would you be with your dad when he's talking to your mother?
Yes, sir.
Can you give the jury some sense of how frequently, as a family, y'all would engage in telephone conversations daily?
Yeah, it was very frequent. I mean, I spoke to my mom every day, multiple times a day, and the like for my dad and for my brother, too. And that's just me, and I know it's like they're all talking to each other, too. Just a lot of conversating throughout the day over the telephones within the family.
Okay. So, Doug, I'm going to pull up State's Exhibit 520, which is in evidence, and this is the Rudovsky extended or extensive timeline, not the condensed version. State's 520, and if you'll go to page 14, please. So, Buster, what I'd like to do, and this starts at just at 1:11:10 p.m. If you could blow up that first entry, Doug, and this is in evidence offered by the state. And I just want to go through some of these again. So, at 1:10, this document says, Paul Murdoch misses a phone call from Margaret Murdoch. And then at 1:11:36, it says, Maggie makes an outgoing phone call to Buster, answered 1:22 long. Do you have any independent recollection of this particular phone call?
No, sir.
Okay. But if you keep working your way down, at 1:19, Doug, there's another entry. It says, Paul Murdoch makes an outgoing phone call to Mom. You see that? At 1:19.
Yes, sir.
And then if we'll go down to... Well, so I guess let's just stop there. Is it frequent that your mother would reach out to you and Paul during the day?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And if you'll go down to 1:41, please, Doug, at 1:41:33. And you see Maggie makes an outgoing phone call to Buster. Do you see that? At 1:42, I'm sorry.
Yes, sir.
And then right before that, at 1:41, it looks like Maggie makes an outgoing phone call to Alex, not answered. Do you see that?
Yes, sir.
And then if you go right below that, it says 1:42:43, Maggie makes an outgoing phone call to Paul. Now, you see that?
Yes, sir.
Anything unusual going on this day, or is this sort of how life was in the Murdoch family?
No, this was normal. This was the way we communicated.
Okay. And then if you'll go to page 15, Doug, at the bottom, at entry 1:52:39 p.m., says Maggie Murdoch makes outgoing phone call to Buster, answered at 1:19. So here's another call from your mother. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Not unusual, was it?
Not unusual.
All right. Then page 16, at 1:55:40, if you'll take a look, blow that up, Doug, says Maggie Murdoch received an incoming phone call from PA Alec Murdoch. Answered 6:18. And that was your dad and mom apparently talking, correct?
Yes, sir.
And then right below that at 1:56:18, there's some instant messages to you about some medication. Do you remember what this might be about?
Yeah, so this was about, I take a medication called Dupixent, which is a self-given shot. And I was up in Rock Hill, and I needed to get the medicine delivered to this address here on the screen.
Okay.
And that's what we were talking about. She was, you know, calling the pharmacy to get it redirected to that address.
Normal day. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
All right. Doug, if you go to page 19 at 3:24:20 p.m. Excuse me, I'm sorry. 3:24:35. Alex Murdoch received an incoming phone call from Buster. 518 seconds. Sitting here today, do you remember what the phone call was about?
No, sir. I don't know specifically what it's about.
But just normal.
Yeah, just
day in the life of Buster Murdoch.
That's right.
Talking to his parents.
Yes, sir.
If you go to page 24, Doug, at 4:42:56 p.m., see, that looks like at 4:42, your mother's calling you again, right?
Yes, sir.
Anything unusual going on?
No, sir.
And then if you'll go to page 26, Doug, at 5:16:25 p.m. And there's an entry that says Alec Murdoch calls Buster Murdoch. Do you see that?
Yes, sir.
Looks like a 6-second call. Do you remember what that might be about?
No, 6 seconds could be a butt dial. That would happen often.
All right. And then if you go down the bottom of the page at 5:21:11, looks like there's a 92-second call, which is about 5 minutes after what might have been the butt dial. It says, Alex Murdoch receives a call, Buster, answered 92 seconds long. You see that?
Yes, sir.
So are you returning your dad's call, you think?
Probably.
Yep. And I'll just carry through. If we'll, Doug, if you'll go to page 32 at 6:52:13 p.m., please. Pull that up. Thank you. So this entry says Alec Murdoch calls Terry Brandstetter 412 seconds. Who's Terry Brandstetter?
Papa T.
And Would your dad call your grandfather fairly regularly?
Yes, sir, he would.
So again, anything unusual going on the 7th for y'all to have all these communications?
No, sir.
And then we'll jump to page 49, Doug. And if you go to 908-58. And it says, Alec Murdoch, iMessages, Maggie Murdoch stating, quote, going to check on M, be right back, close quote. Now, who's M?
My grandma.
And this is at 908-58. And then at 910-47, there's an entry that says, Alec Murdoch calls Buster. And it says 60 seconds long. And that's at 9:10:47 p.m. on June 7th. Do you remember getting that phone call?
Yes, sir.
What did you talk about?
Objection.
What did you talk about?
Basis for the objection.
I'm just reacting to hearsay.
Pardon?
I don't open the door to anything else. I was reacting to hearsay.
Yes, sir. I asked what the topic was, Your Honor.
Objection's overruled.
Yeah, don't say what your dad said. Just tell me what y'all talked about.
Yeah, well, we just talked about, like, hey, how you doing? And then he said that he was going out to...
Hang on. Okay. I mean, I thought he didn't want to hear hearsay, but I'm sorry, Your Honor. Go ahead.
And he was just letting me know that he was going out to Alameda to check on them.
Okay. And was this a unusual conversation you had with him?
No, sir.
What was his demeanor in the conversation?
Normal.
Had it changed from any of the other times you talked to him earlier in the day on the 7th?
No, sir.
And would he on occasion call you when he was going to check on his mother, M?
He would, yes, sir.
Was that an unusual occurrence?
No, probably one of the more regular occurrences. We all usually would make phone calls like riding in a car. So when he was riding over, it's very common for him to call.
You take that down, Doug. So just going through this extraction from, say, 1 o'clock until what we just talked about, 9 o'clock, we did either multiple phone calls within the family. Tell the jury about the cell phone coverage at Moselle.
Not great cell phone coverage. Didn't have a lot of service, especially around. So if you were underneath the shed, at the shed, it had a metal roof. It just couldn't get any service inside of it. It was spotty around the whole property, and it had honestly gotten bad up at the house. We had just put on a new roof. Roof was metal, and just kind of hindered a lot of the phone coverage out there.
Would it be unusual for your dad to leave his phone at the house when he was going down to the shed?
No, sir.
Can't leave the witness.
No, sir. Would not be unusual.
Well, did your dad always have his phone with him when he was on the property at Moselle?
Not all the time.
Did your brother always have the phone on him when he was at the property at Moselle?
Not always on him. He would have it near him, but, you know, he's out there working on stuff and didn't always have his phone just in his hand or in his pockets or anything like that.
Did your father ever, like, misplace his phone?
Yes, sir.
Was that a frequent occurrence?
It was.
How about your brother? Did he ever misplace his phone?
He did.
Was that frequent?
It was.
Now, there's been some testimony about Bubba.
Yes, sir.
Who's Bubba?
Bubba was our dog.
What kind of dog was Bubba?
He's a yellow lab.
And was he difficult to control?
He could be, but for the most part, no. He would listen. He would listen to Dad more than anybody else. But also, we had a gun dog shot collar that we would put on him sometimes. And when he had that on, he was on his P's and Q's.
The switching gears, another topic. When your dad, well, let me just put it like this. How frequently would your dad take a shower or a bath?
He could take them. He could take them a lot. And he, you know, working out there, if he goes outside and sweats a lot, comes back in and takes a shower.
Was that normal routine for him?
It was.
And did he sweat a lot?
Yeah, it's hot out there in the summertime.
Was he a lot bigger then than he is today?
He was.
How big was he?
Probably 6'4", 250, 260.
Right. Alan, excuse me, Buster, were you aware that your dad had a opioid addiction?
A little bit. I knew a little bit about the usage of pills.
What did you know about it?
I knew that either my brother and mom had found them at some point and then, you know, told them, like, hey, we found these. And I want to say the 2018, around Christmas, he went to a detox facility after Christmas. And that was my knowledge of it. Thought that handled it. And then there were a couple more times after the fact where they would kind of go into this finding pills, all that stuff. And then he did a few kind of like at home, just self-detoxed a couple times. And, you know, thought, you know, once he did that, you know, get off of them. But that was kind of my general knowledge about it all.
You thought he had beat it.
That's right. Yes, sir.
And when he was confronted about his pills, what was his attitude?
I don't know for sure because I wasn't there when a lot of the confrontations happened with them finding the pills. But, I mean, I've never heard anything just, you know, apologetic and, right, you know, sorry, and would usually be his kind of regular, you know, kind of response.
How did your family handle disputes, like disagreements?
Like adults, pretty civilly, talked about it, stuff like that. I mean, and it just depends on the dispute too. Like, right, you know, like I was a kid, you know, I get spanked, stuff like that. It's not really a disagreement. That's just
once you're a teenager and college age.
Right.
Any reprimand or disputes you gotten into with your father, was it all civil?
Yeah, definitely civil.
Did your father show patience with you and your brother?
Yes, sir. He would.
Was there ever any violence in the family?
No, sir.
In February of 2019, your brother was in a boating accident. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And I believe, where were you living at the time?
Columbia.
Okay. And was he criminally charged eventually?
Yes, sir.
And what type of reaction was there to his involvement in the boating accident, his criminal charges, sort of in the community in Hampton?
I would say a negative reaction in the community. The media spike kind of got going after it. There was a lot of articles in the media about, you know, our family and stuff like that.
And to your knowledge, was Paul being threatened or bullied on social media or anything like that?
Yeah, he was definitely being bullied in or on social media. Just people sending random messages, and I would talk to him. I know a lot of times he'd be walking down the sidewalk and, you know, a car comes by and they would yell some stuff at him. I knew he would go out, you know, in a bar and, you know, there's somebody that wants to talk about it and, you know, make a scuff about it, whatnot.
Right. What was your mother's reaction to all the negativity surrounding the boating accident?
It, you know, it kind of consumed her. She's big on reading all of it. And when she read the negative stuff, it, you know, made her feel upset and whatnot. And it ultimately kind of caused her to distance herself from Hampton. At this time, you know, primarily living at Moselle. She quit going to the grocery stores in Hampton, quit going to the pharmacy, quit going to get food in Hampton, just thought that there was a real, you know, kind of a bad vibe in Hampton. Like you go, she right. felt like people were staring at her and talking about her and stuff.
Where would she do her shop?
She moved over to Waterboro and started going over that way.
Right. Were you sued in the boating accident?
Yes, sir.
No response.
With regard to relevance, Your Honor, it's civil litigation about the boating accident has been a big part of the state's case. He's a party to the litigation.
Overrule the objection.
Were you sued?
Yes, sir.
Was your dad sued?
He was.
Was your mother sued?
Her estate became sued.
But before she was murdered, had she been sued?
I don't know. I can't remember.
Okay.
Maybe.
And do you know if Paul had been sued?
No, I don't know that he had been sued.
Okay. Well, was your mother anxious about the civil lawsuit?
Yes, sir.
What was her biggest concern?
Her biggest concern was reading articles after, you know, Mark Tinsley had made a statement about how much money he was wanting to collect in the civil lawsuits. And I think it was to the tune of like $40 million or something like that. He was trying to get, and that made her anxious.
And, what was your reaction to statements like that?
Well, I mean, I knew what he was saying, but I mean, it's not to me. It just didn't seem, you know, I didn't think, well, I don't have $40 million. So.
Right. And was your dad anxious about the lawsuit to your knowledge?
Didn't appear to be overly anxious about it.
What took priority, the criminal case against Paul or the civil case?
The criminal case.
Right. And did the family support Paul in the criminal matter?
Yes, sir.
What do you mean by that?
I mean that supported him in his criminal case because, you know, amongst the family, none of us thought that he was driving the boat. We thought he'd been
at the time of the accident.
That's correct.
Let's now talk about the weekends leading up to June the 7th.
Yes, sir.
And we showed the picture of the lake weekend that where you were went up to Kiwi with the Proctors and the Brandstetters?
Yes, sir.
And then the following weekend, I believe, was Memorial Day. Were you with your family on Memorial Day weekend?
Yes, sir.
And who was present?
A lot of people were present. I was there. My brother was there. My mom, my dad. My brother had some friends staying with us. And those were the people sleeping there. And then people are, you know, in and out throughout the day, throughout the weekend.
It was a fun family weekend?
Yes, sir.
Okay. gives a normal Memorial Day weekend at Edisto with your family and friends.
That's right.
Okay, let me show you. I'm going to show you Defendant's Exhibit 123. And I want to get you to identify it, Buster. Just say what it is, please.
It's a picture of my mom and my dad and I on a boat.
Is that Memorial Day weekend?
Yes, sir.
Your Honor, we move Defendant's Exhibit 123 in the evidence.
Okay. It's admitted.
Is this the photo, Buster?
Yes, sir.
And then I believe this same weekend there was a birthday party or cookout. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Doug, if you could play exhibit, defense exhibit 61, please. It's in evidence. And we'll just take a look at that.
Yes, sir.
And that was a group of friends. When's your dad's birthday? Do you know the exact date? It's not a test. Just say you don't know if you don't.
No, I don't know the exact date.
It's around Memorial Day?
That's right. Okay. 27th, maybe.
Then the following weekend, there was a baseball tournament in Columbia, correct?
Yep. Yes, sir.
Tell the jury about that weekend. What happened there?
That was the weekend South Carolina was hosting a regional baseball tournament, and me, my mom, my dad, and my girlfriend went to the baseball games.
And where was the game?
Columbia.
And it was a super regional or?
Regional.
A regional.
Yes, sir.
And what days of that weekend did you go to the game?
Saturday and Sunday.
Did your mom and dad stay in Columbia that weekend?
They did.
Or they stayed on Saturday night?
Yes, sir. Okay.
And you, did y'all tailgate with them on Saturday or Sunday?
Yes, sir. We did. Okay.
And was it a normal weekend?
It was.
Fun weekend?
Yes, sir.
And that Sunday would have been June the 6th, is that right?
Yes, sir. Okay.
And then on June the 7th, we went through a host of number of telephone calls with you and your dad and mom leading up to 9:08, 9:10 on June 7th. Buster, when did you first find out that your mom and brother were murdered?
My dad called me. I can't remember the exact time, but it was later. And he called me on the phone. He asked me if I was sitting down, and I was like, yeah. And then he, you know, sounded odd, and then he told me that my mom and brother had been shot.
What'd you do?
Well, Brooklyn, my girlfriend, was with me, and I think she heard she could hear my conversation kind of over the phone. And so she just started packing stuff. And I kind of just sat there for a minute. I was in shock. But eventually we got our stuff together and drove down to Moselle.
Do you remember what time you got to Moselle?
It was early in the morning, late in the morning. You know, if we left around 10:30, 11, got there sometime probably around 2:00 in the morning.
And when you got there, did you see your dad?
Yes, sir.
What kind of
condition was he in? What was his demeanor?
Yeah, his demeanor was, I mean, he was destroyed. He was heartbroken. I walked in the door and saw him and gave him a hug and just broken down.
Could he speak?
Not really.
Was he crying?
Yes, sir.
Who else was in the house? Do you remember?
Yeah. My girlfriend, Brooklyn, and I got there. Out in the driveway, my Uncle Randy and Uncle John were out there. Chris Wilson and Corey Fleming had just gotten there. They had pulled in behind us. And when I walked in, several of the partners were there. Ronnie Crosby was there. Lee Cope was there. Mark Ball was there. Austin Crosby was there. William Barnes. My buddy Nolan was there. And I'm sure I'm leaving some out, but that's sure. What I remember.
And do you remember how long you stayed there?
Stayed there several hours, probably 3 or 4 hours, till about 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning.
And where did you go?
And then we left Moselle, and we went to Alameda.
When you say we, who are you talking about?
My girlfriend, my dad, and my Uncle John.
I know this seems kind of trivial, but what was your dad wearing when you first saw him?
Shorts, t-shirt.
And did you help him pack?
I did, yes, sir.
What did you do to help him pack?
Got his bag and went into the closet, grabbed some t-shirts, grabbed some shorts, grabbed toilet kit. Put in the bag and left.
Why were you doing the packing?
Just trying to help him. He was so upset. We were all upset, but just trying to expedite the process of getting to Alameda.
When you went in to pack your dad, was there a t-shirt laying on the floor?
I couldn't remember.
Did you get shirts from above the... Where did you get the t-shirts from?
Got them from the closet, and there's like a wooden, it's like wooden shelves up on the wall, and I was getting the t-shirts from there.
Were there a lot of t-shirts on the shelf?
Yes, sir.
Do you know whether or not one of the t-shirts fell on the floor when you were packing?
I don't know whether one of them fell on the floor or not, but I mean, certainly could have happened.
When you got to Moselle, were you able to get some sleep?
No, sir.
Did you go back to Moselle the next morning?
Yes, sir.
And who went with you?
Me, my girlfriend Brooklyn, and my dad, and maybe John Marvin. I don't know if he was riding with us or already out there separately, but he was somewhere in the mix.
Do you remember roughly what time you got to Moselle?
I mean, I think we got there rather early. You know, nobody really slept, and about early in the morning, sun comes up. Just
did go back. Did you take a shower in Brooklyn? Take a shower at Alameda, or did you do it over at Moselle?
No, sir. We tried to sleep at Alameda, and then we took everything back with us to Moselle, and we showered there.
You know where your dad took a shower that morning?
Moselle.
And when you went back over in the morning, do you know what your dad was wearing? When you were traveling from Alameda
back? No, not specifically, but I know that, I know what I packed, so it could have been any of that. It's just athletic shorts and t-shirts and stuff.
And after you got to Moselle, and I guess just carrying the days forward, were you with your dad? Well, how often were you with your dad once you got back to Moselle on the 8th?
Yeah, every day.
For how many days?
For a good while.
Okay, so let's talk about where you stayed on the night of the 8th. Do you remember?
Night of the 8th would have either stayed back at Alameda, or that's potentially when we made the transition over to John Marvin's hunting lodge. Okay.
Would you say we, or are you including your father?
Yes, sir. Okay.
Did you drive together?
Yes, sir.
Was he pretty much in your eyesight for the first few days?
Yes, sir.
And so after the 8th, and then you come up on the 9th, a Wednesday, do you know whether you were at Alameda or spending the night at your Uncle John Marvin's place?
Yeah, I think at that point we had switched over to his place over Greenfield.
Yeah. And you call it Greenfield. That's the name of his hunting?
Yes, sir. Just the name of the property overall. The
property. And how far is it from Alameda?
To Greenfield?
Yeah.
A couple minutes. I mean, not
close
very,
by. Close
yeah,
by.
Right down the road.
And then, and do you remember how long you stayed at Greenfield with your dad?
Yeah, I mean, several days. And, you know, I think anywhere from the 9th to the, you know, probably that rest of that week through that weekend.
Yeah, on Thursday, June 10th, what happened?
Grandfather died.
So the family was together and stayed together?
Yes, sir.
Do you ever remember your dad disappearing for any periods of time?
No, sir.
Were you physically close to him most all the time?
Yes, sir.
Except when you were sleeping?
That's right.
And I believe the funeral for your mom and brother memorial service was on that Saturday?
Yes, sir.
And then that Sunday was a funeral for your father? Grandfather.
Grandfather, yes, sir.
And at some point in time you went to did you go to Somerville at some point in time?
Yes, sir.
Do you remember when you went to Somerville?
Right, you know, beginning of that next week.
Okay. I'm going to show you what I've marked as Defendant's Exhibit 129 and ask you.
We discussed previously, we're objecting on the hearsay basis to 129.
Yes, sir. Your Honor, I'm not introducing 129, I'm offering it to the witness to refresh his recollection. That's the next step.
All right.
But it's for ID. Sir, I don't want you to publish that, but I want you to, I want to ask you that Defendant's Exhibit 129, marked for identification purposes, refreshes your recollection as to when you left to go to Somerville.
Yes, sir.
Tell the jury what is that? What's that document you have in your hand?
It's a text thread between my girlfriend and I.
And does it have, so based on that text communication between you and your girlfriend, refresh your recollection, when did you leave to go to Somerville?
June 14th.
And looking through there, refreshing your recollection, how long did you stay in Somerville?
Stayed in Somerville until the 17th.
And then what do you remember doing after you left Somerville?
On the 17th, we left Somerville to go to Lake Kiwi.
And so when you were in Somerville from the 14th to the 17th, who were you staying with?
staying with my grandparents.
And then you went to Kiwi. Who did you go with?
Went with my dad and I, my grandparents, my aunt and uncle, and their children, their children's boyfriends, and that was it.
So you're with your dad from the night of June 7th through the Kiwi trip, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And you remember what you did after the Lake Kiwi trip?
No.
At some point in time, you decide, you know, I've got to go back to Rock Hill?
Yeah, yes, sir.
Remember roughly when that was?
No, I mean, I think it was sometime following all this, but I can't tell you exactly when I went back to work.
When you decide to go back to Rock Hill, you had a job in Charlotte, is that right?
Yes, sir.
Did you have any discussions with your father about your personal safety?
Yes, sir.
Did he make any offers to you?
He did.
What offers did he make to you?
He offered me to...
Basis for the objection.
Hearsay. Self-serving hearsay.
No, no, offer is not hearsay. It's an offer.
The objection is sustained.
Did you take any security precautions?
No.
Did you want any security protection?
No, sir, I didn't.
Why not?
Well, I didn't want to carry a gun or anything like that, and I also didn't want like a private security detail following me around, just for lack of privacy. And at the time, the places that I was staying and the places that I were going, like I was staying at Rock Hill in my girlfriend's house, who has, you know, alarm systems and security cameras and whatnot. And then other than that, I'm staying in hotels, which, you know, I just felt
did it. Some point in time, you and your father announced a reward?
Yes, sir.
I'm sure you would have marked as Defendant's Exhibit 126 and ask if you identify this. If you can identify this.
Yeah, yes, sir. This is the reward.
It's a news release about the reward?
Yes, sir.
Your Honor, we've moved Defendant's Exhibit 126 to evidence this time.
No objection.
Submitted without objection.
Can you pull it up, Doug? And if you could just pull out the top two paragraphs, please, Doug. Oh, you can't. Okay. Did you work on this language with your dad?
Yes, sir.
Can you read to the jury the first two paragraphs, please, beginning with Alex and Buster Murdoch?
Yes, sir. Alec and Buster Murdoch announced today a reward of $100,000 for information leading to the arrest and conviction of the person or persons who brutally murdered Paul and Maggie on June 7th, 2021. I want to thank everyone for the incredible love and support that we have received over the last few weeks. Now is the time to bring justice for Maggie and Paul. Buster and I, along with Maggie's mother, father, and our entire family, ask that anyone with helpful information immediately call the SLED tip line or crime support. Sorry, Crime Stoppers.
Thank you. Now there's in the body of this, there's a expiration date on this reward. What's your understanding of the purpose of having an expiration date?
I'm not real sure.
Okay. Well, you say it says to be eligible, the person claiming the reward must submit the tip to SLED or Crime Stoppers by September 31, 2021?
Yes, sir.
Okay. What happened in September, early September 2021, Buster?
Talking about the...
Yeah, do you remember your dad
yes,
went
sir.
Off to detox, roadside shooting?
Yes, sir.
From that moment that your dad went to the hospital and went to detox, did he ever come back home to his property, his clothes, his belongings, to
no,
your
sir.
Knowledge?
No, sir.
There's been some questions about whereabouts are Alex's clothes. Can you tell the jury, before he went off to detox, where his clothes were? How many different locations he had clothes?
Had clothes at Moselle, had clothes at Greenfield, had clothes at probably a few clothes at Alameda, had clothes at Randy and Christie's house, had clothes a lot of places.
You have clothes down at Chichesse?
Yep, Chichesse, Okotie.
You have clothes at Edisto?
Yes, sir.
You have clothes in his car?
Yes, sir.
Can't lead the witness.
How many nights after June 7th, to your knowledge, did your dad spend at Moselle?
None.
How many nights after June 7th did you spend at Moselle?
None.
I'm going to, Doug, you have the Snapchat video? Can you pull that up, please? Of the tree. Your Honor, this is the Snapchat video that's in evidence. I'll get the exhibit number for the record shortly. Buster, you recognize that shirt?
Yes, sir.
What kind of shirt is it?
It's like a, short sleeve button down shirt.
Is it a Columbia shirt?
No, it doesn't look like a Columbia shirt.
What color is it?
It's blue.
Did your dad have a foam green Columbia sports shirt?
Maybe.
Okay. Is this it?
No. This is blue.
Did you know if your dad ever ordered any Vinnie Vine or I don't know? Did he order clothes after your mother and brother's murders?
Maybe he ordered clothes, but he doesn't wear a lot of Vineyard Vines.
Okay. Have you ever seen him buy Vineyard Vine?
No, sir.
And you can take that down, Doug. Sometime in August, did you go with your dad where you played in a golf tournament?
Yes, sir. I went played in a golf tournament, and he came and wanted to watch us play in it.
And what kind of golf tournament?
It's a golf tournament that a buddy of mine puts on in Somerville every year. It's called the Jasso Invitational. It's just a bunch of guys that are friends come together and play in a golf tournament.
And did you look up the date of that tournament before testifying today?
I did.
And what date, what weekend was that tournament in August of
Excuse me, in 2021.
Yeah, it's the last weekend in August of 2021.
Okay. Do you know if you were in the, well, was there a house Johnny Parker had that your dad kept stuff in?
Yes, sir. There's a small house in between Johnny Parker's house and my Uncle Randy's house. It's, I think Mr. Johnny built it for his mom or mother-in-law or something when she was sick. But yeah, there's a little two-bedroom house right there.
And did your dad stay there?
He did. He did.
I don't know if we mentioned that as one of the places where there was clothing.
Yeah, that'd be one. That'd be another one.
All right. So there are a lot of places.
Yes, sir.
Were you there? Did you observe your dad talking to Blanca about anything? Were you getting ready to go on the golf trip?
No, sir.
Okay. You were not present?
No, sir. I don't think I was present.
Did you go in any other golfing outings? In August with your dad, if you're not.
Yes. Earlier August of that year, we played golf down in Hilton Head with the people from the Trial Lawyers Convention.
Okay. Now you've been sitting in this courtroom since day one?
Yes, sir.
Every trial started?
Every day.
And were you here when a video was played of an interview with your dad on June 10th?
Yes, sir.
And there was a question about whether your dad said, I did him so bad or they did him so bad. Do you remember that?
Yes, sir.
You recognize your dad's voice?
I do.
If you listen to it, would you be able to tell the jury whether it's I or they?
Yes, sir.
Your Honor, I'd like to pull up Exhibit 153, the clip. What'd your dad say?
Said they did them so bad. They did them so bad.
Is that the first time you'd heard him say they did him so bad?
No, sir.
When was the first time you heard him say they did him so bad?
First time I heard him say that was the night that I went down to Moselle, the night of June the 7th.
Did he say that more than one time?
He did.
1 second, Your Honor. Let me check to see what I left out. Just very briefly, Buster, you've heard testimony during this trial that your dad was stealing money from clients. Did you know anything about that?
No, sir.
And just lastly, roughly how long would it take to clean a dog run down at the kennels? Two dog runs, for example.
Roughly, I'd say 10 minutes or so.
And what do you have to do?
You got to get the hose, turn the hose on, spray out the dog kennels. You got to, put the bed on top of the wooden box so the bed's not wet.
Now, what are you spraying? Dog manure?
Yeah, spraying, dog poop.
And it spreads out.
That's right. Yeah, you got to spray it. Make sure it's all out of there. Spray it to the back.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That's all I have, Your Honor.
We'll take a break now, ladies and gentlemen. After about 15 minutes, please go to the jury room. Please do not discuss the case.
That wraps up segment number one of our continuing coverage in the trial of Alec Murdaugh, day 19 in the courtroom here on the 21st of February, 2023. There's more to come. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com. Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.